Hello, I'm Matt Mayton, editor of Total Film, and welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. This week, I'm joined by our reviews editor, Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
So it's another double Matt special here today.
Excellent!
This week, we've got a slightly shorter episode for you, but we have got some very interesting new films to be discussing, including Zoe Kravitz's directorial debut, Blink Twice, freaky horror, Cuckoo, and Irish language rap biopic, Kneecap. We won't be reviewing the new version of The Crow starring Bill Skarsgård this week, as it has not been screened for critics in the UK, unfortunately. Nope. Read into that what you will. But before we get on to this week's new releases, have you been watching anything else this week, Matthew?
Yeah, I've seen a biographical drama called Widow Clico, which is also out this week. Starring Hayley Bennett as, let me get this right, as Barb Nicole Ponsardin Clico, who's basically, it's about wine making, champagne making. She's the widow of a champagne maker, and the story is essentially the story of how she continued on his work in the face of kind of lots of kind of patriarchal obstacles. There's lots of kind of grim faced, humorless men in this film telling her that she can't carry on because dash it all, she's a woman, so she can't carry on with this work. And it's how she kind of she faced down the patriarchs and pushed forward with her experimental work. And so it's essentially a success story because it's a very well known brand that she pioneered of the champagne. I won't say too much about it, but I felt it needed a bit more fizz, really. It's kind of very sort of classy and elegant. Do you see that pun I did?
Nice. Yeah,
got Sam Riley in it as well. And he starred with Hayley Bennett in a film called She Is Love, I think it came out last year. And they always seem to have like a nice rapport, and they do here. He's kind of one of the more sort of fun elements in this, and she's very good as well. But yeah, as a drama, it does feel a little bit flat. It feels like there is just a more sort of bubbly version to be made of this film.
Hayley Bennett is one of those people who I actually really like. And she seemed a few years ago like really on the verge of sort of breaking out as like a next big thing. But despite, you know, doing some interesting stuff, it never quite, she never quite exploded in the way that you thought she might. But
no.
There's still, and obviously, I didn't realize that she was in Magazine Dreams as well, which is obviously... the Jonathan Majors film that's been sort of somewhat left on the shelf. I still kind of enjoy her work. There's still time for her to break big. There was that time she was in like The Girl on the Train and Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
Rules Don't Apply all around the same time, and it felt like she was going to explode then. But just one
Swallow,
of those.
Was it called Swallow?
Oh, yeah.
I thought she was terrific in that. I thought that was a terrific film.
Yeah. I was very fond of that one as well. Sort of disturbing, but very good. But yes, good luck with this one, Hayley. Did it make you fancy like a glass of fizz afterwards? Is it one of those films? Or
yeah, a little bit actually. Yeah,
But this week I haven't really watched much in the way of films, you know, beyond what we're discussing today. But I did go and see something which is kind of, there is a film connection. I saw the Eras Tour, the Eras Tour, if I go for the American pronunciation, at Wembley Stadium on Monday. Nice. And even though I'd already seen it on Disney Plus, it still blew me away. And there's something about just obviously the atmosphere of being there, 92,000 people singing along, just Taylor Swift's sheer sort of stage presence, just the sheer like absolute number of bangers that she's done over the years and over the different eras. There's just so many. And it's one of those things that you do get a lot of bang for your buck. I mean, as you'll know, if you've seen the Disney Plus version or indeed the cinema version when that came out, it's over 3 hours, her show, and that you get a couple of support acts as well. And it just never really sort of lags or anything. And I felt the same when I watched it on Disney Plus, but I kind of thought like, oh, am I just going to be a bit tired? You know, like sort of 2 hours into it, am I going to start flagging or losing interest? But I just really didn't. And then even if you're vaguely familiar with the set list, you get an idea of when it's coming to the end. Then I was a bit like, oh, I don't want it to come to an end.
Encore.
It was just so good. And then it was one of those things in the couple of days that have followed since, I found myself, I just look back on it so fondly. And I think, those situations where I wouldn't really want to just go again straight away because I think that's like the cheat's way out. But there's something about those live events being ephemeral and sort of transient,
Yeah,
but
unique.
just obviously makes them extra special. And it's obviously why people
Yeah.
kind of pay big bucks for those things still these
Yeah.
days. They just did this amazing thing where they gave out these light up wristband things,
I've heard about these,
and
yeah.
I just couldn't get my head around how they worked, because you're basically handed one as you go in, then you pull out this tab, to get, the battery going or whatever. And then they just kind of light up in sync with the songs and various things that are happening. And then there's
Wow.
times you when you know because I was really high up in the gods, at Wembley. But when you're kind of looking over at the other side and you can see it kind of just shimmering in these different colors, where it'll be like, green and purple or whatever, and it kind of moving like waves. And then there'll be times they all go orange, for a particular moment.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get my head around how they were working, if there was some kind of like radio signal or something, or if there was some kind of timer, because I just don't see how it could just be a timer, because not everyone would have pulled out the tab at exactly the same time, but
Yeah.
whatever it was. And it just looked amazing. And again, it was
Clever
just something
tech.
kind of magical to be a part of. And
Yeah.
a sort of a metaphor or whatever that really stuck with me was, I read in a review, I believe it was on Mojo, that compared her to like a little sparkly Tinkerbell. Because that is kind of how it feels, because obviously, you are so far away really from the
Yeah.
stage. But she has all these different sequined outfits, and it's just such a well put together show, with the outfit changes, the dance routines, the way the stage moves and everything like that. It was very, very good, as I'm not the first person to say, but that was a great experience. That's, like I say, tangentially film related, so
Yeah.
I feel that counts to say that's something else I've watched this week. But on to new film releases now. And first up, it's time for a luxurious getaway.
Did we just jet off to a billionaire's island with a bunch of strangers?
Oh, he's not a stranger. He's Slater King.
I can't tell you how healing it's been just to disconnect.
Phones, please. Wait, for real?
It's just better without the phones. I hope it's okay. This is my favorite one.
I think I'll survive.
We grow our own food. I wear the same thing every day.
So do you think it's weird that there's like clothes for us? I think it's just like rich.
It's not what I thought it was gonna be.
What do you mean?
The legendary parties of Slater King. Blink twice if I'm in danger.
What day is it?
I don't know.
When are we leaving?
Whenever you want.
You okay?
Dude, your eye.
Can't you feel it? There's something wrong with this place.
I've turned under my nails and I don't know how I got there.
Are you having a good time?
So that was Blink Twice, which is the directorial debut of Zoe Kravitz, who also co-writes with E.T. Feigenbaum. Basically, this is the story of a young woman who's a cocktail waitress, Frida, played by Naomi Ackie. And she basically meets this billionaire tech guy called Slater King, who's played by Channing Tatum, who is now Zoe Kravitz's real life partner as well. And it never really goes into detail about what Slater King does, or how, what he made his money on. But he's just some big tech bro, we come to accept. And when we kind of introduced him at the beginning of the story, he's clearly had some kind of bad behavior that's gone public. So he's on a sort of apology, a groveling apology tour, trying to launder his name, I suppose. It's at this sort of fancy function, really, where Frida manages to meet him, get talking to him. And it's not long before Frida and her friend Jess, who's played by Elia Shawcat, get invited to a kind of, ongoing hedonistic party on Slater's private island. And from there, I mean, as you kind of expect, and you'll know this if you've seen the trailers, this is really a thriller. So from there, there's just suspicious things are kind of happening, aren't they, Matthew?
Yeah.
And again, you perhaps don't want to know too much more detail than that before you see the film. But, you very, very early on get the sense that all is not quite what it seems on this island. And it might be a dangerous situation that Frida has found herself in, despite how very charming Slater King seems. But Matthew, did you enjoy this film? Our reviewer in the magazine, Leila Latif, gave this a big 5 stars. So
she did, yeah.
And it has got some very positive reviews. But
yeah.
How did you find it, Matthew?
I probably wouldn't go that far. Probably wouldn't go to the full 5. Yeah, I mean, it kept me gripped, certainly. I think more for the for Zoe Kravitz directions rather than the story itself. I mean, I found that the story, I did find it quite predictable. I have to say, I felt like there were some tropes that I'd seen before. And I felt like the trailer gives away a fair amount. And even the poster, I think, kind of heavily hints at what's going on. I know it's difficult. You've got to sell a film. I mean, you can't withhold too much. But yeah, I didn't feel like it sprang too many surprises. But yeah, I thought her direction was very slick and stylish. I mean, every shot is kind of very visually eye-catching. She knows how to shoot a load of bags looking very ominous lined up on a shelf. That's very impressive. And this kind of and this lush island as well, but with all these kind of insidious, slightly unnerving elements that creep in into the frame. I think she does a great job with close-ups as well. There's some very sort of intimidating close-ups of certain characters or very emotive and fearful close-ups. So yeah, I enjoyed all that and the performances. Lots of familiar faces in this, like Gina Davis. She kind of pops in and out of the action. She's a very intriguing character. And then people like Christian Slater, Carl McLachlan, Haley Joel Osment. So yeah, I enjoyed all that, and I thought Aki herself was terrific as our kind of viewpoint character. You were sort of with her all the way. But yeah, overall, I found it a little bit perhaps derivative. I don't know if I should say the kind of films I thought that were influenced on it, if that gives away too much, but there were like at least three films I felt very strongly that were in the mix. Okay.
I felt sort of similar in many ways to you, although I think I actually just overall enjoyed it a bit more, because I did think it was a very, very slick, entertaining thriller. And it's actually weirdly very funny as well.
Yeah.
And there'll be some slight parallels between this and another film we'll discuss this week, where you do that thing where you just see two films on the trot and then there just seem to be weirdly strange parallels between them, even though they're not that similar as far as films go. But I thought this, despite the fact it is a thriller and has some disturbing moments in it, I actually thought it was just really surprisingly consistently funny. Mm. That's something that surprised me about it. And yeah, I liked Naomi Aki a lot. I thought Channing was very good in terms of this kind of playing this very charming character, you know, that you could imagine people being swept along with him and wanting to go and party on his private island, basically. And there's lots of kind of real world parallels you could choose to draw if you wanted to. I don't feel like it does particularly take aim at anyone in particular, but there's various things, you know, that it'll various conversations it will kind of start at least afterwards. And yeah, there's very enjoyable supporting cast as well, from partly from the sort of sleazy men that end up on this trip as well. And another person who I would sort of shout out is Adria Arjona, who's having a very good year. And she's another of the revelers on this island. And I mean, she gets to do quite a lot in this film. She's one of the key supporting roles, really. But she's just got such a great way with like looks and stuff, like withering looks and things early on in the film. And her character, I forget the exact name, but she comes from like this survival reality show, but I feel like it's got a funnier name than that. Yeah. It's called something like Bikini Babe Survivor or something.
Yeah.
And so she's obviously come to this place with some sort of survival instincts, but she's very good. I thought I really, really enjoyed her. And again, it's part of like a great year for her following Hitman. Yeah. And obviously great year for Channing Tatum as well, after obviously his surprise cameo in a certain superhero movie. And I actually quite enjoyed Fly Me to the Moon as well, despite the fact it wasn't really a hit. Yeah. I thought that was an enjoyable sort of film. So he's on a good run at the moment. But yeah, I like you, I was really impressed with Zoe Kravitz's directing, in that it feels exceptionally assured for a debut.
Yeah, it really does.
And I mean, obviously she would have spent a lot of time on film sets and things like that. And yeah, the editing is just really sort of fun. You get little snippets cut in, don't you, of like where you're not quite sure if they're flash forwards and flashbacks and things like that are nicely done. And just part of it for me that just showed the intent that I just really enjoyed is the title card for like Blink Twice just comes up in such a brief flash of
cut. It's almost subliminal, isn't it?
But it was really, really nicely done, I thought. And it kind of, I felt a bit similar to you in that I maybe expected like an extra dimension of surprise to it, and that like I'm never the biggest fan when films just layer twist after twist after twist on things.
Yeah.
And I thought this did a nice job of kind of unveiling its secrets, and without going too much down the sort of exposition rabbit hole or anything like that, but kind of felt like it was clear enough what was going on, but without the, you know, someone having to just march around spelling it all out. But I maybe expected an extra dimension of a kind of just another dimension to it, basically, I suppose.
I thought it had a nice line in kind of lots of sort of casual throwaway details in the first half that then gather bigger meaning later on or have payoffs. I thought Kravitz handled those particularly well. They kind of build up and then the payoffs are quite satisfying.
I don't know, again, Matthew, I don't go into it too much because if you think it will risk spoiling by making too close comparisons. But for me to make a sort of broad comparison to someone who's, again, been in the news a bit this year, it felt a bit M. Night Shyamalan in a way. Like, it sort of felt a bit like almost like a sort of feminist spin on what could be like an M. Night Shyamalan story in a way.
Yeah.
But yes, very, very impressively handled. And like, I thought it did a good job, like I said, finding it very funny, but in a way that didn't really undercut the tension and the just the general aura of like unpleasantness and sort of scariness behind the sort of idyllic facade. But despite the fact I was kind of, you know, laughing a lot, I felt like it just didn't undercut the tension or turn it into a snark fest or anything like that. I thought it did a good job of treading that line nicely, actually.
Yeah, so very dark laughs, aren't they? And some quite grisly visuals as well.
So if you like the sound of that and want to check that out, that is Blink Twice, which is in cinemas now. Next up, it's time for another disturbing situation in a remote location.
A police investigator, Henry Lando. I'd like to ask you a few questions about the incident.
I need you to help me find that woman.
What was your first day, my dear?
Not good.
The closer you come to where we are now,
the amount of people that have encountered the woman increases.
When are we going to see some action?
So that was Cuckoo, which is a new horror film written and directed by Tillman Singer, starring Hunter Schafer, as well as Dan Stevens, Jessica Henwick, and some others. But Matthew, do you want to, this is a strange little film, but do you want to try to set it up for us?
That's tricky, but I'll try. Yeah, so Hunter Schafer plays Gretchen, who's moving with her family, including her dad's new wife and their daughter, to the German Alps, where she meets some quite sinister characters, notably Dan Stevens, doing quite an impeccable German accent and pronunciation. I mean, my German's pretty terrible, but I thought he was pretty convincing, knowing him in his natural state.
He's done German before in I'm Your Man, hasn't he? So that he must have some kind of affinity with sort of the German culture or society or something, but to be that good at it. But anyway, sorry.
And she gets a job in the sort of the local hotels at this resort as a receptionist. But then strange things start to occur, like her little sister starts having these seizures. And the film itself kind of simulates seizures often, and there's like repetitions of seeing the screen starts like kind of wobbling intensely, and there's these loud, disconcerting noises, strange characters suddenly appearing. She appears to be stalked by someone, this very sinister figure chasing after her, and she kind of digs deeper into this mystery of what is actually going on here that involves, can't really go too much into it, but medical experimentation, essentially. So yeah, she's caught in the trap in the middle of all this and has to figure a way out, basically. But I will say, they do explain the title, which I very much appreciated. It's not the kind of vague, you can come out going, why is it called that? They do explain it, and there is a cuckoo clock in it as well, so bonus point for that, for being works on both a literal and a metaphorical level. So I'm giving a thumbs up for that.
Yes, as I mentioned, it's a very strange film, and also I alluded to this earlier as well, but it ties strangely to me to Blink Twice, which I saw both these in the same day. We saw Cuckoo in the morning and Blink Twice in the evening. Yeah, so it felt strange to me in that in many ways they're very different, but they both follow these characters who end up in these weird isolated environments outside of their comfort zone, outside of where they can really get a great deal of help, and they're just in these weird situations where you don't fully know what's going on, but clearly something sinister is happening. So I thought that was just a really strange parallel. And the other parallel I would draw is this was as well in places, this was very funny, I thought. I mean, I would ultimately describe it as a horror, but it did just verge on comedy for me for much of the time, intentionally so, I felt, you know. And there was just a lot that made me laugh, because it's just partly because it's so bizarre, partly because of Dan Stevens. And again, in Dan Stevens, you have this sort of charming host who you know very early on feel that there's probably something sinister going on underneath. But yeah, so just a weird parallel of two films like that to be released on the same week. And this was an odd film for me, Matthew, because again, broadly speaking, I liked it, but I didn't love it, despite the fact I really liked certain elements of it, if you know what I mean. But I didn't love the whole overall, because you get this kind of mysterious opening, which kind of sets the scene a bit, but obviously leaves you very much like, what is going on here? And you know, you will find out, you know, it does come together somewhat late, you know, a bit like Blink Twice Again. There's a lot of mystery for a long time, and you're not really sure what's going on, and it's hard to get your head around. And I kind of ultimately came away from it feeling a bit like, oh yeah, I found that a bit hard to get my head around exactly what was going on there. Perhaps for that reason, it almost dragged a little bit for me, even though it's not really like the longest film, but it did verge on dragging for me, to be honest. So that was a negative. But there were interesting things about it, like I say, things I found funny. It's just a bizarre, there was almost like a slight, like, I don't know, like Inside Number 9 quality or something, or Yorgos Lanthimos quality to it, in just the bizarre things that are going on, and the bizarre happenings in this hotel, and this sort of other people, you know, the other kind of characters that come in and out of view that are a bit abrasive. And I thought as well, without going too much detail, the character that we see kind of pursuing Gretchen at times, I did actually find a creepy character, to be honest. Like, I found it. I did find it unsettling. There were a couple of bits that really made me jump as well. So on that level, it worked. But yeah, but there's something about it. It just didn't entirely tie together for me, despite enjoying those elements. But how did you feel?
Yeah, I felt like it didn't quite cohere. Ultimately, I found it, some of the characters' motivations a bit foggy at times, which stopped me really kind of investing in the trajectory of the characters. And yeah, like you say, I did feel it started to drag, but sort of more towards the end when the action's kind of picking up. I mean, it does get a lot more sort of bloody and like full on horror towards the end. But I felt like those bits were kind of played out a bit too long, dragged on a bit, and got a bit repetitive, even though that is when the action's kind of at its most in explosive. So but yeah, I think it's a great looking film. It has this kind of sort of weirdly sort of timeless look to it. I wasn't quite sure which period it was at time, sort of 70s.
Yeah, that's true. And I was thinking that when watching it, that there doesn't seem to be any like smartphones in it, for example, does there? So yeah, you can never quite sort of place the era, that in some ways you just instinctively feel it's like the present day, and other ways you you feel like, is it the 70s? Is it the 90s? Is it just some completely other time period?
Breaks you off a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. And there's, again, another film with sort of disturbing imagery and connotations in it as well.
Yeah, very sinister male behaviour.
Yeah, more sinister male behaviour. And it's sort of quite a complex web in a sense, because the Gretchen character has just moved from the US. So you know, we're obviously in Germany, and the film takes place in the Bavarian Alps, where there's a hotel and there's a new building planning to be constructed there, which is why Gretchen's dad goes over there. But then obviously he's got a new wife, and so then who he has a daughter with, who Gretchen isn't close to, and there's sort of, you know, that tension there. And then also in the mix, there's like a police detective kind of character who, again, like you say, motivations are a bit foggy. He's sort of invested in this case, but perhaps again has his own agenda. Yeah, there's quite a lot going on in that sense, isn't there? Despite it being very stripped back and a focused setting, you know, there's a lot going on within that. But yeah, an interesting film, but not entirely successful for me personally. I still was one of those weird films that I felt like I really appreciated what they were trying to do, but I didn't actually love it myself. But if you do want to check that out, that is Cuckoo, which is in cinemas now. And for the final film this week, it's time for an unexpected Gaelic lesson.
There are 80,000 native Irish speakers in Ireland.
Three
of us have become rappers.
You may know the words, but you don't understand the language.
George, I go studio with you.
What?
August Wrench Beats.
Can you like?
Well, you hear an Abbey Roadie?
Abbey what? Who thought you? NRC
Argusha boys and Roland 808. Yeah, sir, are gonna be as real like for Kyoto if we like Grimmer. When she blast us, bin the dahri seal hip hop. Could you on your?
Do I look like I want to read subtitles?
Hien, do, tree.
So that is Kneecap. It's kind of a hard film to pin down, really, isn't it, Matthew? It's sort of a comedy, sort of a biopic.
Yeah.
But how would you sort of sum up Kneecap for anyone who hasn't heard of it yet?
Well, I guess it's a fictionalized biopic of Kneecap, the titular trio, Irish hip hop trio. So it's effectively their origin story, how they came to prominence, and it's all kind of rooted. I mean, it is a comedy very much. It's very kind of irreverent and playful, but it does has a very kind of serious political point about the Irish language, about keeping that alive, keeping it in circulation, and freeing that from being suppressed. That's very much at the heart of it. I sort of see, like, there's been quite a lot of comparisons with Train Spotting, you know, from any number of reasons, from the style and the kind of the copious drug use that's on display in this film as well. But this feels like it has a more sort of focused political charge to it as well. So it's like an Irish history lesson, a linguistics lesson as well.
Yeah, it's like a really interesting film because I saw this as part of the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year. It premiered, and then I watched it again in preparation for this podcast. And I mean, I actually really enjoyed this film. I'll say that straight off. And like you kind of said, it's got this intense energy to it, and it's just from the start. And like I can definitely see those Train Spotting comparisons, especially as these kind of like youths who are sort of looking for their place in this world and culture, I suppose, and feeling a bit left behind, maybe. The music is like intensely catchy as well, because I can't say I'd ever heard any Irish language hip hop before this. And obviously that's part of, you know, the point of the film that a lot of people tell them, there's kind of no such thing as Irish hip hop. It's an interesting little story because you have this duo that the rappers, and then they effectively end up teaming up with this teacher, basically, don't they? Basically, he ends up coming into contact with them because one of them is arrested and needs an Irish language speaker to kind of come and interpret for him at the police station. This teacher is called along and gets to know him from there. And before you know it, they're sort of making music together, and he's kind of producing the music, I suppose, and he's DJing at their live gigs hidden under a balaclava. Also adding a bit of tension to this is the fact that this teacher character, JJ, his wife, is very much sort of a champion of the Irish language campaign, you know, to get it spoken more widely and sort of taught in schools and things like that. So, but then it's sort of, she doesn't realize that he's obviously part of this musical outfit. So that's a kind of bit of a tension and a story thread that runs through the film.
Yeah. Quite an unlikely pop star, isn't he?
Yes.
Kind of the source of a lot of laughs in the film, really.
But and then like another thing which you haven't actually mentioned yet, which is sort of in a way like quite an important element of the film, is that the three main characters who make Kneecap, they actually play themselves in the film, giving it an extra sort of strange dimension as well, because you know that the sort of meta oddness of them playing themselves basically telling their own story. And doing a pretty decent job as actors, all of them.
They seem very natural, I thought, on screen. It's like much better than other pop stars we've seen kind of effectively play themselves. I thought they were much more successful.
I mean, the younger guys get away on their sort of, because they've just got so much energy and attitude. Again, you know, they're obviously playing themselves in that way. But JJ, I just genuinely, I even thought, because I knew there was this element to the film, but I even wondered if he was an actor and the other two were playing themselves or something. But he's playing himself as well. So that adds an interesting dimension to it. And also, as well, Michael Fassbender also plays a kind of a key supporting role in this, isn't he? He's very much a supporting role, but a prominent one. And he does, you know, kind of pop up a couple of times throughout the film. And he plays the sort of missing father of one of the rappers, the rapper Nisha, and he's his father Arlo. And Arlo kind of went missing, presumed dead, possibly faked his own death, we'd learn early on. So he's kind of out of the picture, but he still looms large. One thing I would say about this film is, I don't know if you felt the same, Matthew, but I'm not the most knowledgeable when it comes to Irish history. And it does feel that you need at least a small grasp on Irish history, yeah, and what led up to the ceasefire and the troubles and the, I don't know if you felt the same, but I had to actually just look up some of the lingo afterwards. Yeah. Yeah, even the teacher who joins him, he goes by the working alias DJ Provy. And I sort of had to look up what that meant, you know, and it's obviously the kind of connection to the, what we would more commonly know as the IRA. The other rapper, Liam, he gets in a relationship with a girl named Georgia. They have some very funny back and forths between them and some of their conflicting ideas. But even then, some of it was slightly going over my head. I don't know if you've, did you feel the same way through? Is it just me being completely ignorant of recent history?
Yeah, there are, yeah, there's quite a few references, aren't there? But yeah, the banter is so kind of rapid fire, layered with all these references to kind of recent and past history. It probably would take a couple of viewings to pick it all up. But I mean, it's kind of a really lively way of doing, of like giving the audience a history lesson without kind of talking down to them or making it dry. So I think that aspect worked really well.
Yeah, and that's kind of true of the whole film, really, in just the way that that obviously it is basically cool for the Irish language to be sort of taken more seriously and more spoken, but it's just done in such an entertaining way, and it just doesn't feel like a didactic lesson just because of the nature of the story. But yes, a very, very enjoyable film.
And it's like right from the start, it seems aware of the cliches of films about the Troubles. It kind of parodies that right from the first scene. So it's kind of getting the audience on board with its kind of irreverence and accessibility as well.
And again, despite all the kind of serious political stuff in the mix, it's very funny.
Yeah.
There's this kind of group that they keep crossing paths with, radical Republicans against drugs, that I found their clashes sort of very funny. And I just found it very enjoyable. And some of the songs kind of not only stuck in my head, but just as soon as they start rapping them, you just almost feel like you want to start dancing along or something, because there's just such a weird sort of mesmerizing meter or whatever to their lyrics and the way they're spoken, and then the way the odd sort of English swear word or something drops in as well. The occasional untranslatable thing. Yeah, it was a very, very engaging film. And one of those films, I felt this at Sundance and felt it again when I rewatched it, but it is just one of those films that just grabs you from the beginning, I thought, as well. Just straight away, you're just like, whoa, like, what is this? It's just a bit like that, again, is where the Trainspotting comparison, I think, comes in as well, in terms of that being another film that just kind of grabbed you just from the beginning. And you're just like, whoa, like, you know, just yanked into this world and running along with these characters. So, yeah, so I did find it very, very enjoyable overall.
Me too.
Okay, so that is Kneecap. And if you fancy seeing that, that is also in cinemas now. So almost at the end of the podcast, Matthew, it's been a short one this week, but what is your film of the week from this trio?
I think they're all interesting films, all with strong qualities, but yeah, nothing Kneecap by far in terms of the most kind of entertaining and satisfying film.
Yes, it's also definitely Kneecap for me if I can't go for the Eras Tour, the live version. But yes, so Kneecap, very, very enjoyable. But I do think Blink Twice is very much worth a watch as well. Yeah, but Kneecap, definitely my film of the week. And I could see myself revisiting it again in the future. And it's the sort of film that feels like a film that once people see it, you'll just want to recommend it to friends as well, because it's just so different and so entertaining and just such a nice energetic watch. But we're almost at the end of the podcast now. A quick reminder that our Beetlejuice issue is still on sale now. So you can find that in shops or you can pick it up digitally. And if you take out a subscription, you'll be able to get instant digital access to that Beetlejuice issue and loads of other back issues as well. So you can start reading immediately before your first print copy arrives. And if you don't subscribe already and want to join us, you'll be able to find a subscription link in the podcast notes. And talking of subscribing, if you like this podcast, please do subscribe and review on your podcast app of choice. And remember, if you want to contact us about anything, you can find us on our social media channels or email us at totalfilm@futurenet.com. We always enjoy hearing from you. So before we go, time for a quick question, but we're obviously going to be gearing up for the big autumn festival soon with Venice and TIFF on the horizon now. But is there any film, Matthew, that's premiering at those festivals that you're particularly excited to, you know, hear about and hear the reactions to?
I do like the look of Wolves. I really like John Watts's Spider-Man movies. He did a fine job in refreshing that character. I do like the look of the trailer. I mean, I've seen the trailer so many times. It has been on heavy rotation, but it grabs me every time I see it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. I think that could be a banger potentially.
Compared to a lot of people, I wasn't the world's biggest fan of Joker, but
No.
I obviously am intrigued, very much intrigued to see what the sequel's going to be like. And you know there's going to be a hell of a lot of discourse, don't you, when Joker drops. And then obviously, I mean, as you'll see from my latest issue of Beetlejuice, I'm immensely excited about Beetlejuice. And the first film was a somewhat kind of pivotal film for me again when I was younger, and pivotal film that really scared the heck out of me as well. So particularly the bit where Alec Baldwin and Geena Davis kind of turn really old at speed at the end and start like falling apart. It was just that bit really that scared me, like as opposed to the whole film. But that just absolutely terrified me that moment. And I love the look of like the trailers, and obviously just from our on-set feature to plug that again, it got me very excited about all the kind of practical magic that there'll be in this film. So I'm really hoping that's a proper return to form for Tim Burton.
Seems like one that he's quite excited about. It feels like his heart's in it.
I'm very intrigued by Night Bitch as well, the new Amy Adams film
Of
directed
course, yeah.
by Mariel Heller. So I'm just really intrigued by that one. Always a big fan of Amy Adams. And almost perhaps top of my list for a film that is premiering at TIFF, I believe, is The Wild Robot, just because this is a film that I've done some interviews for it previously. Another shameless plug, but check out the piece in the current issue of Total Film. But Chris Sanders, the director, has been behind some of the like great recent animated films, including he co-directed How to Train Your Dragon, the first one, and he co-directed Lilo and Stitch, was kind of the creator of Lilo and Stitch, really. And he does the voice of Stitch as well, even though in reality he sounds absolutely nothing like Stitch. But his new film, The Wild Robot, I love the look of it. I love the sort of painterly art style they've gone with. I love the idea of the story. I've been reading the book with my child as well, so I've been really enjoying that. It's a really great children's book. I'm just really, really excited to see this film. So that's also very high up there. And sometimes as well, when you are in the midst of a festival, you just want a really enjoyable, nice mainstream film where you get so many intense dramas when you're at festivals. You get so many like really full-on foreign language films that sometimes when there's just a feel-good mainstream film at a festival, it does go down nicely. But yes, that's what I'm perhaps most excited about.
I'm looking forward to that one too. It's giving me the kind of Iron Giant, Wall-E type vibes. Looks very kind
Which
of very soulful and potentially tear-jerking.
I'd also add into the mix Robot Dreams as well. If it's anywhere close to one of those three films mentioned, it's going to be an absolute banger. But that's all from us for now. And until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.